I am delighted that you're here tonight. We have a good crowd present this evening. We appreciate the presence of everyone. I hope you've got your Bible with you and are eager to study with us as we talk about things that have to do with serving God and going to heaven in the after while. Tomorrow evening, we'll be closing our series of study by looking at Acts, the second chapter. We're going to talk about the conversion of 3,000, and I encourage you to go back and reread that chapter as we get ready for that study. And your reading through that will enhance your understanding of tomorrow night's lesson as we talk about Acts chapter 2 and look at it from a textual standpoint. We're going to work our way through the context of Acts chapter 2. Come back and be a part of that study. We've been encouraging you to bring your friends and neighbors throughout all the week, but especially tomorrow evening as we talk about a first principle study, I encourage you to bring your friend or your neighbor with you. As most of you know, I live in Shelville, Tennessee. That should be pronounced Shelbyville, I suppose. But I live in Shelville, Tennessee. And that's the heart of horse country. Many people in town have show horses or trail horses. They're training facilities all over the county. No matter which direction you go, you'll come into contact with a big barn and then another big barn and then another big barn and another big barn. And most of those housing 30 to 40 to 50 to 100 horses each. In a county of some 35,000 people, estimates that we have 20,000 horses in the county. So we are indeed horse country. Everybody in town knows a little bit about horses. Even if they hate horses, they know a little bit about horses in Bedford County. There would be a few counties, I suppose, in Ohio or Texas that might have more horses, but in the southeast, I think we would probably take the prize. It is the home of the Tennessee Walking Horse, and the arena you see seats 35,000 people, and it's filled with people who come to see these Tennessee Walking Horses. And I mentioned the fact that we are in the heart of horse country because everybody in our area knows a little bit about training horses. They may not know a thing about horses except the fact that they have to be trained because there are trainers all over town. And there are names in town that are household names and everybody recognizes them as a trainer. Now there must be something that we can learn from horses because the Bible talks about horses a good bit. In fact, horses are mentioned 40 times in the New King James. The term horse is mentioned 40 times. Horses are mentioned 144 times in the same translation. Horsemen 51 times. Sometimes it's mentioned literally, like in Exodus chapter 15 and in verse 1, in the Song of Miriam, the horse and the rider are cast into the sea. They literally were in the destruction of the Egyptians. Sometimes it's used figuratively. Christ was pictured as riding on a white horse. Now, that's not a literal white horse, but that is a figurative expression. Sometimes the term horse is used by comparison. For example, the Bible talks about as the whip is for the horse, so is the rod for the fool. It's found in Proverbs 26 and verse 3. There's something to be learned about a horse. And from learning from the horse, we make application to our life. Well, we see another case where there is the comparison. We're all familiar with James chapter 3 and verse 3. That as you put a bit in a horse's mouth to control the horse, so we are to bridle our tongue. And one of the points made in James chapter 3 is that you can never trust that horse and you can never trust your tongue where you can take the bridle out and say, I don't ever have to put the bridle on because I can trust this horse fully. You can't ever fully trust your tongue. There's a lot to learn from the horse. And the same thing is true we find in Psalm 32 and in verse 9. You might turn there. This has to do with a man being taught and learning something. And the text says at verse 9, and this is Psalm 32 and in verse 9, do not be like the horse or like the mule. There's a time we need to be like the horse, and there's a time we don't need to be like the horse. So don't be like the horse or the mule, which has no understanding, but must be harnessed with bit and bridle, or else he'll not come near you. So what's the point? The point is we need to learn and be taught God's word, or else we're like the horse and the mule. So there's a great deal of comparison between what we do and how we're to behave that is to be learned from horses. Now, we're going to be talking tonight, obviously not about horses. I didn't come to talk about horses tonight. As much as I love them, I didn't come to talk about horses. I come to talk about training children. But I want you to learn something about horses. As it applies to training children, here's what I want you to see. What a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training. Don't you get that concept in your mind? What a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training. Before you, the picture is one of the highest-priced horses in the industry. or the best horses you've ever seen in the last 50 years. A horse has been priced at better than $2.5 million. We're talking about a show horse. We're talking about a world grand champion. But the reason that horse is so great is it's because he's been trained. He's been trained. That's the big deal about that horse. Been trained to do great things. Here's another horse of the same breed, maybe of the same line, could even be a brother to that horse. But the problem with this horse is he's not worth a whole lot because he's not been trained. What a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training in the area where I live. All across the country, you can go to shows and see horses do various things. You can see a horse bow. You can see a horse sit. You can even find a horse that'll lay down and pull cover up on it like it's going to bed. I've seen that before. You know how horses can do that? It's because they've been trained. What a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training. Horses can be trained to do various things, but it takes a lot of time. Now, you could take any horse. You could take just an old gray horse and teach it to bow or teach it to sit. But you probably don't want to spend the time that it takes to do that. Those who teach horses to do this have spent a lot of time doing that. It takes a lot of time to get a horse to do what you want it to do. Not far from here in Lawrenceburg and Lawrence County, you see horses like this all over the county. You see the Amish riding their horses in the buggy, and those are well-trained horses, not high-dollar horses, but well-trained horses. They don't spook in traffic. They stand still while they're loading, and you know why they do that? It's because they've been trained. What a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training. The higher end of the dollar horse, as you go into maybe multi-million dollar horses like Mind the Bird, which you see before you, that horse can run a mile and a quarter track. Won the Kentucky Derby. That horse is something. Yes, there's something to the bloodline, but that horse is what it is because of the training. What a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training. What I use horses for is to trail ride. And you get out on the trail ride and you begin to ride horses and you have good horses. And what's a good horse? Well, a good horse is a horse that would be well behaved. This is a horse that comes when you call and when you whistle. This is a horse that'll do what you ask it to do. You know why those horses are good horses? It's because they've been trained to be good horses. I get out on the trail and I find a number of people, especially when we go on a group ride and there's hundreds of people riding horses all around you, and there'll be some redneck comes running by you and he's screaming at his horse because his horse won't behave and his horse is a terribly bad horse, a problem horse. You know why that problem horse is what it does? It's because he's been trained. He won't stand still. He eats along the trail. The horse wants to run and take off. And the horse is behaving that way because the horse was trained to do that. And you say, why would anybody train their horse? That's a good question. But I want you to keep that in your mind. Here's a misbehaving horse, but he was trained to misbehave. How so? We'll answer that in a moment. But it's not unusual to find someone riding a horse. They think you can just jump on a horse and they take off riding and the horse is supposed to behave and the horse is misbehaving. And why is he misbehaving? Because they've trained that horse to misbehave. Maybe because of a lack of training. Now pay close attention to this. The horse and the rider is training all of the time. You don't have to understand much about horses to understand this principle, that you don't just train a horse and now you're through with the training. Now I can ride and enjoy, or I can show this horse, or I can put him in a race, or I can put him in a buggy. You're training the horse at all times. At all times you're training a horse. We train our horses by what we allow them to do. We train our horses by what we tolerate in them. We train them by not correcting things concerning their behavior. You see, the rider allows the horse to do something, and he doesn't understand why the horse does that. It's because he's trained the horse to do that because he allows the horse to get by with that time and time and time again. One of the things I can't stand out on the trail is someone who lets their horse run over your horse. And every time somebody runs over your horse, they'll say, I don't know why he does that. And I'm thinking, I know why he does that. It's because you trained him that way. And I never tell them that, but if I did, they'd say, no, I didn't train him to do that. He just does that. Yes, you trained him to do that, but what you have allowed and what you have tolerated and what you didn't correct, therefore you trained him to do that. By your toleration, you've trained your horse to do that. I ride with people who say, my horse eats on the trail all the time. He's all constantly grabbing at bushes, and I hate that, and I wish you wouldn't do that. Well, you trained him to do that because you did not correct that. Here's the lesson to learn, and that is it's all in the training. A great horse is doing what it was trained to do. A bad horse is doing what it was trained to do. Training takes time, and it takes work. And one more thing about the horses before we leave that illustration, I want you to get this point. We train horses to do what we don't want them to do. And the same thing is true with our children. We often are training them to do what we don't want them to do. We often train our animals to do things we don't want them to do. By toleration, by lack of correction, we have just trained them to do what we don't want them to do. So tonight I want to talk about training our children. We're going to make some comparison to that horse foundation that we just talked about. But I want to talk about training our children, and there are two things I want us to consider in our study tonight. We're going to talk about the training, and then I want to talk about the difference it makes. I just painted for you with horses the difference. There's a good horse and there are bad horses, and watch the difference. It's all in the training. And when we get to that section, that'll be merely application of the training itself. Let's talk about the training of children. So I encourage you to get your Bible and just turn to the book of Proverbs, if you will, 22 and in verse 6. Proverbs chapter 22 and in verse 6. You are familiar with this text, which says, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. First, I recognize that is a parable. That is, here is a general statement to which there could be exceptions, but generally this is a true statement. And that is, there may be exceptions, and that's the nature of Proverbs. They're generally true statements. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. Let's look at two things about that proverb. First of all, he says, train up a child in the way that he should go. That simply focuses on how you raise the child. Then the text says, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. That focuses on what that child will be as an adult. Now let's go back to the horse for a moment. You get a young horse and you say, well, I've got a 2-year-old horse ready to start training. But here's what I want when he's 5 years old. Here's what I want when he's an aged horse. Here's the behavior that I want him to do. Here's the trick I want him to do. Here's the show thing that I want him to do. I want him to perform the big lick or whatever it may be. Well, if that's what you want him to be when he's older, then that's what you have to start doing in the training when he's younger. So you want a horse that behaves, you start younger training him that. You want him to perform, you go start training that while he's young. The same thing is true with reference to the children. What the child will be as an adult depends upon how he was raised as a small child. And we're going to see that in this very text here this evening. If I want a child that behaves, if I want a child that stops when I tell him to stop, if I want a child that is respectful, if I want a child that goes to church when they're old, if I want a child that fears God when they're old, then I have to start in their youth training them to be the child I want them to be. That's the point of the proverb. Now, I want us to understand that the parents are given responsibility to mold and to shape the children. Let's start right here in Proverbs 22 and in verse 6, and then we'll add some more verses, and then we're going to come back and analyze Proverbs 22 and verse 6 a little more closely. Here in this text says that we as parents have a responsibility to train them in the way that they should go. That is, we're to mold and shape them and point them in the direction where they need to be going. Let's add another verse to that with which we are familiar, and I encourage you to turn with me over to the book of Ephesians chapter 6. Here is where Paul is talking about living the life of a Christian. I've made you a Christian, chapters 1 through 3. And now in chapters 4 through 6, act like one. And part of acting like a Christian is walking in the walk that God would have us to walk as a family. And so notice in Ephesians chapter 6, beginning at verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. Now, are you reading with me at verse 4? Verse 4 says, you new fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. What I'm wanting you to see is a principle we all know and understand, and that is that parents are given the responsibility to mold and to shape your children. That is, if your children grow up and they reach adulthood and they are what they are, it's because of your training. And if they turn out to be something other than what they ought to be, it's because of your training. That's the general principle of these two passages thus far. Let's go now to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6, this is where Moses is preaching in this 30-day period before the embarking upon the crossing of the into the promised land. Moses is trying to instill a respect for God and a respect for His Word in the hearts of the people as they embark upon the conquest. So let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 6, beginning at verse 6. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. First of all, you take these words and you put them in your heart. And then what are you going to do with them? Look at verse 7. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlet between your eyes, and you shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. That is, first of all, you take the words of the Lord. Notice back at verse 1, He's talking about the commandments and the statutes and the judgments of the Lord. You take those in your own heart, and then you sit down and you diligently teach them to your children. And you talk about them all of the time, and you make application of them all of the time, when you're in your house, and when you sit down, and when you rise up, and when you go. But let's go even further. While you're in the book of Deuteronomy, let's back up to chapter 4 and in verse 10. Deuteronomy chapter 4 and in verse 10, especially concerning the day that you stood before the Lord God in Horeb, when the Lord said to me, gather the people to me and I'll let them hear my words that they may learn to fear me. Now what are they going to do? All the days of their life they live on the earth that they may teach their children. So first of all, these people need to learn to fear God, and then they need to take that fear of God and instill that in the hearts of their children. Parents have the responsibility to mold and to shape their children. One more verse before we go further. And this time in Genesis chapter 18, if you will, and in verse 19. Genesis chapter 18 and in verse 19. God said concerning Abraham, at verse 19, I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring Abraham what he has spoken to him. What's he saying? I've told Abraham and I've instructed Abraham and I've chosen Abraham that he should teach his children after him that they may live righteous and do what is right in the sight of the Lord. So what I'm learning from all of those passages is that we have been given the responsibility to mold and to shape our children. Now let's go back to Proverbs 22 and in verse 6. And I want us to look at this idea of train up a child. What is in the idea of training up a child? When the Bible says, train up a child in the way that he should go. I think we well understand the idea of what the way that he should go, the way that he should live. We also understand that when he is old, he'll not depart from it. But what is the idea of training up a child? Well, let's get the idea. It signifies, literally, to dedicate. Let's go over to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 20, if you will. Deuteronomy 20 and in verse 5. This is talking about the principles concerning warfare and going to war. And a man who is married and taken a wife and has not dedicated his house was exempt. Now notice what he says at verse 5. When a man, what man is there who has built a new house and has not dedicated it? Let him go and return to the house lest he die in battle and another man dedicate it. All I'm wanting you to see is the word dedicate. The same word that's used there is the same word that is translated train up. It is translated dedicate in Deuteronomy 20 and in verse 5. Seems to be the idea in our text that when you're training up a child, you're dedicating the child. Perhaps it is the idea of dedicating the child to God and then raising the child as God's child. I don't mean as the thinking the child is already a Christian. But it's as if when this child is born, you're dedicating this child to God, and now I'm going to take that child and raise it as a child that belongs to the hands of God. I recognize this responsibility that I have of training this as God's child. Not going in any direction that He wants to go, but I'm raising it like God would want me to raise the child. So it has the idea of dedication, dedicating this child to God. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown suggest that it means to initiate or early instruct. You train up a child, and it has to do with the idea of early instruct. The idea at the opening of his path or the beginning. It is the idea of starting early. Start young while the child is impressionable and pliable and moldable. So you don't wait till the child has already developed his full personality. Dr. James Dobson suggests that a child's entire personality is shaped by the age of 5. I don't know if that's true or not, but if that's true, that means we've got 5 short years to get that personality shaped and controlled before the child has developed that full personality. So you start early while the child is pliable, while they are impressionable. So you initiate or early instruct. Children can comprehend far more than we give them credit for. And that is, we think, well, it's too young, too early to start teaching this principle. I don't think I can tell them about this. It's too early for telling them that Bible principle or this particular rule. Start molding and shaping very early. They can learn those principles very early. Again, Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says literally his way. That is selected for him in which he should go for early training secures habitual walking in it. So the idea of the early instruct, the early instruction is that the habitual practice from the early age guarantees greater success with reference to them continually walking in that. And that's exactly what the proverb indeed says. But this idea of train up a child, Calvin Daly suggests the idea of affecting the taste that alluded to the practice of putting syrup in the mouth of the suckling. So that you teach the child to nurse by putting syrup in the mouth. So the child starts doing things, the child then becomes accustomed to doing, so they continue to do that. That same concept comes with reference to other Bible principles we're going to be talking about. Brown's Reverend Briggs, this is interesting in light of my opening illustration. Brown's Reverend Briggs suggests that this word, this translated train up, is used to rub the palate of the child with chewed dates. Of a midwife rubbing the palate of a child with oil before it begins to suck. It is also used to make experienced or to make one submissive as one does by a horse by the rope in its mouth. That is, you train that horse. Same concept. It is the idea of starting something early that they're going to continue to practice as time goes on. Now that raises this question, then how do we train our children? Let's list a number of ways in which we train our children. We first of all train our children by instruction. Let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 6, if you will. And I want us to see that in Deuteronomy chapter 6, Moses thought that the way to train children was to instruct them. Now let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 6 and let's go back to verse 1 that we alluded to a moment ago. That these are the commandments and these are the statutes and the judgments that the Lord has commanded you to teach that something should be done. That what? Well, he mentions that a number of times through the context. That you may fear the Lord, that your days may be prolonged. Verse 3, that it may be well with you on the earth. Well, how are we going to accomplish that? Where are we going to teach it diligently to our children? I'm not going to read again verses 7 through 9, but it's in this context where he says, you shall teach them diligently to your children. These commandments and statutes and ordinances and judgments, you take them and teach them diligently and faithfully and carefully to your children. So one of the ways in which we train our children is that by instruction. What am I going to instruct them in? We need to tell our children Bible stories. That may start at the youngest age of telling them a story of Adam and Eve, telling them a story of Noah, telling them a story about Jacob, telling them a story about Isaac. You tell them Bible stories. But as time goes on, we need to string those Bible stories together so they see the timeline of the Bible. So that they understand how Moses and Abraham would relate together. How they understand the promise of Abraham relates to Christ. How they can understand how time periods relate to each other, of the patriarchal period and the Mosaic period. How they can understand the period of the judges and the period of the United Kingdom and the divided kingdom, the pre-exile and the exile and the post-exile period. That they might understand those Bible stories and string those Bible stories together. But it involves much more than that. We need to teach our children Bible doctrine, not just Bible stories. so that they know about Abraham, that needs to be taught. And they know about stories in the life of Christ. Our children need to be taught Bible doctrine. Oh, they'll hear it from the pulpit. They'll hear it in Bible class. But we need to teach them what the Bible teaches about various subjects, about the church, about the home, about the deity of Christ. And on we go with any Bible doctrine. Our children need to be taught Bible doctrine. If we don't, they learn Bible stories. And then they go off to some church at college that teaches something quite soft and skewed, and they're not going to know the difference because those churches are teaching those Bible stories, but they may not be teaching Bible doctrine. Not only do we need to teach them Bible doctrine, teach them the text in its context. We need to teach our children what the book of Romans is, for example, and how chapter 1 relates to chapter 2, and how verse 4 relates to verse 5. Teach them the text in its context. Teach them how this text has been taken out of context. And so teach them the text in context. That's what 2 Peter chapter 3, 16 to 17 is about. We need to teach them Christian living. Not just Bible doctrine, that there is one church and we don't use instrumental music. But we need to teach them how to live the Christian life. And furthermore, we need to teach them application. Not just the principle of the golden rule, but this is a case where we put the golden rule to practice. Not just the principle of love, but here is what love means. Not just some principle of teaching others, but here's where we put that into practice. And so we have a lot of instruction to do with teaching our children, but that's not the only way. Secondly, we teach our children by example. There is a proverb in Ezekiel chapter 16 in verse 44 that says, like mother, like daughter. That as the mother is, the daughter turns out to be just like that. Like father, like son, like mother, like daughter. And what I'm learning from that is that often children turn out to be just like the parents taught them. Remember a moment ago I said that we train our children, or we train our horses, to be something we didn't want them to be. Because our horses are turning out to be just like we trained them. It's not surprising a horse eats along the trail because that's the way you trained him. He turned out to be just like you trained him. And here's a horse that runs back to the barn all the time. You know why he does that? It's because that he turned out to be just like you trained him. And quite often children turn out to the world because that's exactly how the parents trained them. They turn out to be just like the parents. Turn out to be just like they trained them. That was the example they saw. Because children can see through the veneer of your pretending. There's power in your devotion. And when you're not dedicated and you're not devoted, but you send your children to Bible class, you take them to church, but they see at home that you're not what you ought to be, children see through that veneer and they may turn out to be just like you trained them by the example. How are we training our children? We're going to train them by instruction, but we're going to train them by example. Set the example before them, like mother, like daughter, like father, like son. But that's not all. Here's a third way. We often teach our children by what we allow and what we tolerate. Let's go to Judges 14. This is in the period of the judges. And you remember how, Judges chapter 14, that Samson found a woman of the Philistines, Timnah. He went to Timnah and found a woman in Timnah, the daughter of the Philistines. And went and told his father and mother, saying, I have found a woman in Timnah of the daughter of the Philistines. Now therefore get her for me as wife. And his father and mother said to him, is there no one among the daughters of your brethren or among all the people that you should go and find a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines? You see, Exodus 34, Deuteronomy 7 had forbidden that kind of marriage. And they tell him he shouldn't do that. Do you know what happens? They go get a wife of Timnah of the daughter of the Philistines for Samson. And that simply means that they tolerated that. And they allowed something that they themselves recognized was not wise, to say the least. It was something contrary to what they thought ought to be done. And that's one of the reasons I mentioned horses a moment ago, not to tell you all about horses, but we train horses by what we allow and what we tolerate. Let me remind you of that illustration. That quite often I'm riding with people along the trail and they say, I don't understand why my horse runs over yours. I don't understand why my horse wants to kick. I don't understand why he's trying to eat along the trail. And when I head back to the barn, he runs and I can't stop him. It's because you've tolerated that so long. You trained him that way. Oh, no, I didn't train him. Yes, you did, by allowing it and tolerating it. That's why he behaves that way. We train our horses to do things we don't want them to do. And the same thing is true with our children. We train our children by what we allow them to do. We didn't tell them to do it. We just allowed it. We train our children by where we allow them to go. No, I didn't really want them to go to that movie, and I know it had some filthy scenes. I know it had a lot of bad language. I didn't want them to go, but I allowed my children to go there. You're training your children by that. You say, I didn't teach them to use that language. No, but you tolerated some of that. And the concepts that are getting from some of the music, I didn't teach that to them. Yes, you did by allowing that music in your home. But what we allow and what we tolerate. We train our children by what we don't correct. And so here is some misbehavior. You say, I don't like that, but you didn't correct it. You just taught your child that's okay. Because you see, every time my horse reaches over and bites off of the trail something, which I can't stand, if I don't jerk him in the bit and stop that, I'm tolerating and I'm teaching him to do that. You can stop bad behavior. It may even be something we don't approve. And we may be like Samson's parents say, we don't like this. We don't like what you're doing. We don't approve of what you're doing. But we tolerate it anyway. We're training our children to do and to be what we don't want them to do and what we don't want them to be. We train our children by what we allow and what we tolerate. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 12. We train our children by the decisions that we make. Turn to Proverbs chapter 12 with me, if you will. In Proverbs 12 and in verse 26, the righteous should choose his friends carefully. The way of the wicked leads him astray. There are careful decisions we need to make about who our friends are, for example. But we as parents are training our children by the decisions we make. For example, the decisions about time and about schedule, about our own schedule. Maybe as we stay so busy with our work and our interest and our hobbies that we don't have time for our children, what we just taught our children by our time and our schedule is that work and hobbies and et cetera is far more important than family. So don't be surprised if they don't have that concept when they get older. And the same thing is true with things that we allow and decisions we make with reference to their time and their schedule. The decisions we make about work. The decisions we make about where we live and where we'll worship. And so we make a decision, we're going to move to this place because there's a good job and there's good money, but there's not a church there at all, or the church is weak. We may have taught our children something about the importance of religion and the importance of serving God, or the importance of the job over the religious matters by the decisions that we make. The decisions that we make about what those with whom they will associate. The friends that we tolerate. We train our children by the decisions that we make. Let's go to Proverbs 22, if you will, verse 15. We train our children by corrective discipline. Proverbs 22 and in verse 15. The text says, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod will drive it far from him. You know what that text says? Children will misbehave. Children are going to misbehave. Children are going to test the boundaries. Quite often we hear someone say, you know, he's just a boy. Boys will be boys after all. That's true. That's what the proverb is saying. Boys will be boys. Girls will be girls. Kids will be kids. Children are going to misbehave. So as you have children, if you don't have any already, don't be surprised when you have children. They're going to misbehave. That's what the proverb writer said. But rather than just passing it all saying boys will be boys and children will misbehave, notice what else the text says. Look at verse 15. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod will drive it far from him. You know what the rod has reference to? A branch. It's a rod. It's the idea of a switch. My dad used to send me to the tree and get the switch and bring it back, and he used it on me. It means spanking. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. Children will misbehave, but a good spanking will take care of that. And no, that's not child abuse. That's going to take care of that problem. How am I training my children? I train them by instruction in a number of areas. I train them by example. I train them in what I allow and what I tolerate, decisions that I make, and furthermore, corrective discipline. Now, I want to spend the rest of our time talking about the difference. Now, what do we mean by the difference? What are we talking about? We're making application of the principles that we've just studied. And I want to talk about the difference in children. I've told you about the difference in horses. Here's a good horse and here's a bad horse. What's the difference? It's all in the training. What a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training, isn't it? What a child is and what a child does is all in the training. So let's make some application. Let's talk about a child that behaves. Here's a child that does what he's told. That when the parents gives a chore and gives a responsibility, and the parent says, do this or do that, the child does it. The child that stops when the parent says, stop, I mean stop that right now. That's a child that behaves. The child that quits when they're told to quit. And a child that comes when they're called. You say, boy, that'd be nice to have a child that does that. They do what they're told, they stop when they're told, they quit when they're told to quit, and they come when they're called. That'd be great. You know why there are children around like that? Because they've been trained that way. There are parents all around that have children that are well behaved. They weren't just lucky parents. They didn't just happen to have a good crop of children. They trained those children to do that. I go to the field and I whistle and my horses come. You know why they do that? Because I train them to do that. It's all in the training. Same thing with children. When you say stop and the child stops, the reason the child does that is the parents train them to do that. Let's flip the coin. Here's a child that is not controlled. Here's a child that does pretty much what he wants. This is the kind of child that throws a tantrum. When the parent says no, the child gets in the floor and throws a tantrum. And furthermore, he has to be told and told and warned and warned. And he doesn't stop. Do you have a child that when you tell the child, now I mean stop, they don't stop, and you say, well, I'm telling you, I'm warning you one more time, and they don't stop. And then you say, well, I'm telling you, I'm going to get you the next time. And they keep going and they keep on and they keep on. You know why they're that way? It's because you train them that way. You see, when you tell the child stop and he doesn't stop and you don't do anything about that, and you tell him to stop again and you don't do anything, and you tell him to stop again and you don't do anything, and then you warn them and you don't do anything, you've just trained that child that your word means nothing. It's what you trained them. Don't be surprised when they act that way. What a child is and what a child does is all in the training. Let's talk about a child that's respectful. Here's a child that is respectful. This is a child that respects those who are older. That when he addresses those older, he says, yes, sir, and no, sir, and yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am. May even address the older, Mr. Stephen, Miss Amy. Because of respect, because they're older than they are. They show they care about other people. You say, wow, that's impressive when I see kids like that. You know why kids behave that way when they're that way? It's because they have been trained to be that way. What a child is and what a child does is all in the training, isn't it? Let's talk about a child on the flip side of that that is disrespectful. Here's a child that disobeys the parents. They treat older people as if they're peers. They treat someone their grandparents or their parents or their grandparents' age as if they're their equal. They talk disrespectful to an adult. And that's disgusting to be around a child like that. And you say, well, why do children behave that way? I'm going to tell you why they behave that way. They were trained to behave that way. They're turning out just like they were trained. You say, no, I didn't teach my children. Yes, you did, because you didn't correct behavior. Because of what you allowed and because of what you've tolerated, that's what you train them to do. What a child is and what a child does is all in the training, just like with horses. Let's talk about another child. Here's a child that knows their Bible. Here's a child that knows their Bible. They're well versed in the Scriptures. They're great Bible students. They never miss Bible class. They go to every Bible class. They never miss a Bible lesson. They study and they learn their lesson. They don't just fill out the workbook, but they study and they know and they learn their text and they learn their lesson. And they can give that back to you because they know what the text is about. And these are the kind of children that are able to contribute to Bible class discussion. That when you ask a question, they can give an answer. You say, wow, I wish my children were like that. There are children around that fit that degree. You know why? Because they've been trained that way. Children are not just born that way. What a child is and what a child does is all in the training. Talk about children that obey the gospel. Let's talk about a child that learns to be serious about life. And they've learned somewhere along the line the seriousness of what life is all about. They've learned about following Christ and they learned the principle of discipleship, what that means. And they understand they need to be serious about serving the Lord and serious about life. And they finally are baptized of their own will, not the parents pushing them. And you say, wow, that's impressive. I wonder how you get kids to turn out that way. It's all in the training. You see, every one of those children that obeyed the gospel of their own will, they were trained in that direction. Those that know something about the seriousness of life, they were trained in that direction. What a child is, what a child does is all in the training. Talk about children that are diligent. Children that have obeyed the gospel some years ago, but yet now they are faithful. And they're conscientious. They're dedicated and they're devoted to the Lord and they leave home and they remain faithful. And they search out a faithful, diligent church that has a good eldership and has solid Bible teaching because that's where they want to be members. And why do they do that? It all has to do with their training. And those children that leave home and they have no clue of where they're going to go, they don't know anything about a church, of picking out a church, they don't know anything about a sound eldership and whether or not the preaching and teaching is sound. You know why they turn out that way? It's because they've been trained that way. What a child is and what a child does is all in the training. Let's talk about children that want a godly family. They marry one that fears God. When they get to marriageable age and dating age, they look for someone who walks in the fear of God because they want to marry not just one who has been baptized, not just one who is a member of the church. They want to marry someone who fears God. And they do. And then when they get married and have children, they train their own children to walk in the fear of God. And you say, wow, I wish that when my children get to that age, they would marry someone who fears God and they'd train their own children to do that. That would be wonderful. You know why children do that? It's because they were trained to do that. Train a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. You start early and they learn a principle they carry with them the rest of their life. What about a child that attends all the services? You say, I'd love to have a child that attends all the services, that doesn't miss for sports, that doesn't miss for little ailments every time they have a small ache, and they don't miss for work that could be rearranged. And their children all over the country, their young people all over the country, in churches that they'll be there and they're not going to miss for sports and they're not going to miss for work and they're not going to miss for small ailments. And you know why? Because their parents trained them that way. And let's flip the coin on that. And I want to talk about children on the other side of the coin that do miss for sports and they do miss for every small ailment and they do miss for work a great deal. And you know why they're that way? It's because they also were trained to do the very same thing. What a child is and what a child does is all in the training. One more time, and the lesson is yours. What about a child that dresses respectable? Their clothing is not short, it's not low, and it's not tight. But it indeed is respectable and modest. They show respectability in their attitude as well as their conduct. And why is it that children behave that way? When you see young people that dress very modestly, not only in the service, but you see them out in public, they're dressed very modestly, and you wonder, why do they do that? I'll tell you why they do that. It all has to do with their training. They were trained that way. They didn't just soak that up somewhere. They weren't just born with that as part of their brain. They were taught and they were trained that way. And so what have we seen in our study tonight? The training and the difference training our children. We started on the note of training horses. What a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training. And we can understand that with horses, we can also understand that with children. What a child is and what a child does is all in the training. And what we learn from that is that often we're training our children in ways that we don't realize we're actually training them. By what we tolerate, by what we don't correct, by the things that we allow, we're often training our children. May God help us as we embark upon the goal of rearing our children to walk in the fear of God. There may be one or more present who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come while together we stand and while we sing?